For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Thank you for tuning in to the JMU Sports News Podcast. Before we jump into the podcast, we have a quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue to march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE to get started. That's promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Welcome into another edition of the JMU Sports News Podcast. I'm Bennett Conlin. I'm joined by Jack Fitzpatrick. Jack, how are you during what you've described to me today as a dark period for JMU Sports?
Well, when you look ahead, I don't mean to be rash by any means, but basketball isn't great. I mean, they're good. They're average. They're a slightly lucky team. We'll get into some more talk about that and how Ken Pom rates them and everything like that. Women's basketball, they're currently winning as we record this against a bad UNCW team, but they're not living up to expectations. And then you look at across kind of the landscape. We're going to talk about all the highs from 2021, and that includes softball's run in the Women's College World Series, but they lost a lot of their key players. And yeah, they're ranked to start the season, but I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. And then you look ahead to Sunbelt football, where Jamie's going to be playing a full FBS schedule in 2022. And I'm just a little sad. So I think we should start this episode with looking back at 2021, all the highs and kind of some of the lows that 2021 brought us. And then we'll break down into some men's basketball. We'll talk a little women's basketball. But first up, first thing of 2021, it was football season take one.
Yeah, so we got, I don't remember the exact number now, but we got two football seasons in 2021, technically, right, with the calendar year. So that was pretty darn cool. And they were not all that impressive to start off the 2021 football year, where they looked pretty rocky, to be honest with you. In a lot of those early games, there was quarterback controversy. And then a COVID outbreak that actually seemed to benefit, weirdly enough, Cole Johnson, because they had the Morehead State game, which wasn't really a game in February, and everything just kind of felt weird. Like, I think I was covering UVA baseball while they played that game. Like, none of it felt correct.
That was 5 days before my birthday, and I was at an Airbnb watching it as it's, like, heavily snowy outside. Yeah. I was like, what's going on?
Happy belated birthday. 11 months late. Want to make sure we get that in.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of birthdays, you know whose it is today?
I don't.
Brian's.
Yeah, Brian Reese, one of our most loyal.
You literally wished him a happy birthday.
I thought it was a different JMU connection, like a coach or something that I had missed. Yeah, it's his birthday, Brian. I'm sure you're listening. I think he's celebrating New Orleans. I imagine he's taking time out of his New Orleans trip this weekend to listen to the pod. So assuming he is, happy birthday to him. Very cool. And yeah, but they opened with the Morehead State game, not much of a game. Then the Robert Morris game was actually kind of a scare. And we were like, guys, don't worry. Robert Morris is a really good football team. Turned out they weren't really a good football team. But they struggled.
That's probably our miss. I remember we were like, they're going to win the Big South or whatever they were in.
I don't think they won a game that year. They only played like three or four. But And then they played Elon. They almost lost the game. Gage Maloney comes in, leads a comeback, was going to be the starting quarterback. Then they had a COVID outbreak. Cole Johnson played well against William and Mary 3 weeks later. And the rest was kind of history as far as Cole Johnson, who now is preparing like for NFL draft preparations.
Yeah, I mean, what a year it was. And then they destroyed score doesn't really show it, but they essentially destroyed VMI in the weird FCS playoffs, destroyed North Dakota. And then of the 60 minutes, for 54 of them, they destroyed Sam Houston State, but they ended up losing that one in the semifinals.
It was a weird choke in the last, like, you know, weird stretch of the game there. So that was a tough one. That's got to be one of the major lows, I think, of at least for football of 2021 was definitely that game. I guess you could point to like the early season where they didn't look right, but the way they were playing, I feel like 2021 spring was a massive missed opportunity for JMU. I think that's like, you can look at this year as being a national title run. I thought that was a year that they really squandered. If you win that one, you get into the national title against like a South Dakota State team that's was playing decent, but maybe not the best in the world. They obviously had an injury that hurt them. I think they would have won the national title if their starting quarterback had stayed healthy against Sam Houston, but that felt like a year with North Dakota State being as down as it was that JMU probably should have won the national title.
Yeah, agreed. But that sadness wasn't all that long lived because just what the football season ended when?
I want to say, did it end in, it might've been April when they lost. I think the actual national championship was in May. I will quickly confirm. Yeah. They actually lost in May. So they played Sam Houston in May. And I don't think we're used to that gap. I guess they got rid of that gap. You know how there's like that 3 week gap. I don't think they had that in the spring. I think they like just went to the national title.
So where I was going with that is they finished football season in May, and then May 21st, JMU's in the women's college, not women's college World Series, but the postseason at the NCAA Knoxville Regional, taking on Liberty in Tennessee. And they absolutely obliterated their competition in that regional. Then they went to Columbia to take on Mizzou in the Super Regional, and that was exciting. But I think what we really wanted to talk about was the Women's College World Series. I mean, we can talk about Liberty and Tennessee and Missouri a little bit, but man.
Well, you're giving them a positive spin here for sure. It was a battle to get out of that Knoxville Regional. I thought they were going to lose the first game.
I thought they were losing the first, second, and at times the third game. Like, we're being honest. But you got to spin it positive. We just talked about all the lows from football. I got to talk about the highs that this brought us.
But it was unbelievable, like the battle through the Knoxville Regional. And I think fair to say, when you're playing, every game was either a neutral site or on the road, and you go 3-0, two against Liberty, one against Tennessee to advance out of that regional, there is an element of like obliterating, right? Because they had the cards stacked against them. I think they were the 3 seed out of the 4 in that region, which was just a horrible judgment by the NCAA selection committee. Although they kind of got, I don't know if screwed is the right way to describe it, but because of COVID, their schedule, they really didn't play anybody, right? So they're going into that event without having played like quality teams.
And they had a conference loss, which destroys your RPI.
Exactly. So we knew how good they were, but the metrics didn't necessarily show that. And then the Missouri one was crazy because they battle out for that first win. They got smoked in the second game. Like that game was not.
After the second game, I remember I was texting some people and I was like, okay, it was a good season. Like I had completely written the team off after losing 7-1 in the second game of the Columbia Regional, Super Regional, excuse me.
Yeah, then a huge rally to win the third game. They won that one 7-2. And they get into the Women's College World Series, which kind of felt like from a fan perspective, like they did it. Like that's the goal. You just make it to Oklahoma City. It's the same with like college baseball. There's something to be said for like you make it to Omaha, like you've had a great season. And they played number one Oklahoma in the first game. And I thought they were going to get just murdered. Like I was thinking run rule, to be honest with you. I thought it had a chance to be very, very bad. And they won the game.
They won the game in 8 innings, 4-3. Wasn't there I don't want to spoil what happens in Oklahoma State, but wasn't there a fantastic play in that game too, in the Oklahoma game?
I don't remember what there was like in the field. I know the at-bats were pretty huge. So you had Jubas hit the 3-run homer, and you're going to be able to see her this year, but not in a JMU uniform, which pains me. We'll probably get to that later. But she hit a 3-run home run in the third, put them up 3-0. And then Oklahoma answered. So it was 3-3 after three. No one else scores until the eighth when Kate Gordon hits the what ends up being the game-winning home run. But for Odyssey to slow them down, I think we had looked at it and was like, that was their lowest scoring output of the season for Oklahoma was 3. They had beaten up, and I forget the exact one, they are beaten up on national teams. Like Oklahoma at one point during the season played.
I think it was Puerto Rico.
They did something. Well, I guess that wouldn't really be a national team, right? But they
maybe it was Mexico.
they played some national team and like smoked them. And like they killed everyone they played, or at least for the most part, they scored a ton of runs. So if they did lose, it was typically like this high scoring thing. So for Odyssey to do what she did was really special.
Yeah. And then what she did against Oklahoma State. So they come to the Women's College World Series and you are just as a fan, thankful that they got there. They finally get there. They break through the barrier. They make it to Oklahoma City. And then they take down the number one team in the country. And then they take on the number five team in the country, another Oklahoma team, Oklahoma State. And they win that one, 2-1, thanks to Odyssey Alexander's not pitching heroics, but her fielding heroics. And, I mean, this play still, you see it on Twitter every few weeks, maybe because we post it every few weeks. But I feel like other people are also posting it. And it's absolutely an insane play where I think it was a bunt or a slap or something, a slow roller to the mound. Odyssey fields it, and instead of pushing it to the catcher because she knows it won't get there in time, she makes the diving lunge to get the out at home plate to secure the 2-1 win.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable what happened, right? So it's like, I think it was a bunt, but like you're saying, it's a little slow roller. Someone's at third and is running home for what would have been the tying run. I think bottom of the seventh, right? So it's like game on the line, everything there, or at least the seventh. She grabs the ball in the glove, lays out, and holds on to it through the contact to secure the out. I think her elbow was bleeding after, like when she did the post-game interview because of the dive and everything. It is by far, I don't think it's all that close, the best like JMU athletic play that I've seen since covering. I think it's maybe the best like in the history of JMU sports. It's at least up there.
I would argue, not even argue, it is the best play, the best sporting event, sporting thing to happen in the calendar 2021 year.
Yeah.
And then to further that out, I think the moment, what happened, everything with it, that was the best play in JMU history.
Yeah.
I don't think that's crazy to say.
I don't think so either. That was crazy to watch. And then it almost changes that game because they do end up winning. Changes your perception where you're like, wait a second, like, could they win the national title?
Well, they only need one more game to win, right? At that point,
if they won one more, they would have gotten into the final series. They would have gotten into the series that they needed. But they had to go through Oklahoma again. They end up playing them twice and losing both. But again, I mean, the farthest the program's ever gone, unbelievable. Like Odyssey Alexander was a star. Like their final game they lose and she gets a standing ovation from not just JMU fans, but like literally everyone in the stadium, including Oklahoma fans who've seen clearly tremendous softball. I looked it up too. They played Team Mexico 3 times. They had a 2-1 win. The other two were like blowout wins over Team Mexico. So like for JMU to win, unbelievable and just an incredible season, incredible year. And Odyssey Alexander, I think going in, I had said like nobody can really compete with Megan Good as like the GOAT of JMU softball. I mean, Odyssey's kind of got the case because of what she did in Oklahoma City, that she's the best ever play JMU softball.
She's the best ever play JMU softball, and then she's the athlete of the year for JMU sports. The JMU Sports News athlete of the year is Odyssey Alexander. And then moving on from softball, you go to the runner-up of the 2021 athlete of the year. Colt Johnson takes football, who's coming off of the heartbreaking loss to Sam Houston, the ups and downs, the QB controversy. Gage Maloney enters the transfer portal. He's no longer with the team. It's Billy Atkins backing up Cole Johnson. And then they go out and they run through the FCS for the most part. Well, not for the most part. They run through the FCS until they get to North Dakota State in the Fargo Dome.
They're really good. Obviously had that blip against Villanova, but not, I don't know, not like a...
I block that game out so much. Like, I forget that it happens. Wow.
Not a terrible loss by any means. It's one they definitely could have won, but they were really, really solid throughout the FCS season. Disappointing the way it ended, of course, where they were horrible in the first half against North Dakota State and ended up coming up just short on the road in that game. but another good season. Like, I think it's easy to be excited about JMU football, especially with the major news of 2021, obviously kind of an off the field thing, that the athletic programs are going to the Sun Belt, which we might talk about a little later in terms of the logistics of when they move. But that's also a key storyline, right? It's just the future seems brighter now that they're leaving a conference that I don't think anyone's excited about.
Yeah.
Unless you're, maybe if you're Monmouth or Stony Brook or...
I even think Monmouth isn't excited about moving to CAA. Because yeah. Now they had a secured playoff spot almost every year in the Big South, and now they're going to the CAA where they actually have to compete. Besides that, another big event, and then we'll get into some of the conference championships that JMU won, and it was quite a bit. The upset of UVA. I know it's a down year for UVA. It's an NIT team, if that. They're just not very good. But it was the first time JMU ever beat UVA in program history, and I think it was the first time they ever beat an ACC school in program history, at least in like the last 20-something years.
Yeah, heck of a win for the men's basketball team, and maybe amplified or definitely amplified by the fact that it was at home, right? The UVA was willing to travel to the Atlantic.
100% amplified, no doubt. Like, that's why this game was so great.
Exactly. The Atlantic Union Bank Center. We were there. Happy birthday, Brian. He was there. So that was a really cool experience, storming the court, and just having, you know, 8,000 people in that building for a basketball team that appears to be competent. And I think that was just a signal that they're competent, which was huge, right? That's after the Roe era, that's really actually a huge thing of 2021 is like, okay, the basketball team is essentially back to where it was with Brady. And yeah. Now it has a chance to take another step, hopefully moving forward. That signaled it, but it's going to be really interesting looking ahead a little bit to 2022 and beyond, how people talk about like the transfer portal and how that affects college football, but like college basketball, the team that Byington had in, I guess, 2020 to 2021 compared to this 2021-22 team, it's like an entirely different roster.
And I think we'll see that, not to get too big picture here, but I think looking at the transfer portal, especially in college basketball, I think we're going to see it a lot in mid-majors where you're not necessarily going to have the same continuity from year to year. Like, they're really going to attack the transfer portals, and they're going to probably also then get a guy for who maybe a 5-star or 4-star recruit who goes to a big name Power 6 school, doesn't get the minutes he wants, transfers to a mid-major, gets the minutes he wants, shows out, and then transfers again. I think we're going to start seeing that a lot.
Totally agree. It's also interesting too, like, if Byington ever gets another job, you could have this team that's like an NCAA tournament team with people set to return, and the coach leaves, and you could have, you know, an entirely...
Well, I mean, that's what happened when Roe left. You lost Banks, you lost Parker, you lost...
Dwight Wilson,
you lost... Greg Jones transferred before that, I believe.
And then were some of the other losses, did they wait a year under Byington? Is that right? So Christmas was there for a year.
I think that was the only transfer that left this year, right?
I think there might have been
other
another.
Than
he was probably the number one impact guy.
The guy me and you predicted to be player.
Oh, Joel Mensah. We nailed that one, bro.
I don't know what happened to him. He's gone.
We nailed that one. For sure.
And women's basketball, Kiki Jefferson, while they might be a little bit of a down year in 2021, 2022, Kiki Jefferson continues to be an absolute stud in the CAA. And it's just fun being like watching that line of succession go from Precious Hall to Kamaya to Kiki, and then even Jasmine Guathmi before that, and Kirby Buckholder, and I mean all the greats that have come through JMU women's basketball. It's really nice to see that line continue to go, and Kiki is a straight baller.
Yeah, and I think you actually talked to people can probably find that way in the archives. I think you talked to Kamaya on a podcast about that line of players.
I did. Yeah, that's back in our archives on the podcast, but it's probably easier to find on our YouTube channel, JMU Sports News, because it's one of the only videos up there. But that was there a great conversation. That was talking about the team last year and the trajectory and Coach O, what he's done with the program. Maybe that was the highlight of – I think that was actually in 2022, that conversation. But not 2020.
Yeah, it might have been. And one last basketball-related thing that it's easy to forget, I think, when you look at the year in review, is that the basketball tournament, TBT, that event that has, you know, a lot of alumni teams and different teams of people that that get together and they form a team of like 10-ish people with a GM and all that stuff. They play in that tournament, the winner making like $2 million, the winning team, and they split it amongst themselves. Kind of grown into a thing because ESPN's given it a bit of a platform. JMU has tried for a very long time to get a team in that. It took them a while. They weren't able to get it. And then finally, this past summer, they were in it. I actually played a really thrilling game against a, I think, was it Overseas Elite that they played?
It was one of the best. It was like the best team in TBT because JMU is the 13 seed and they were the one.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was
some UMBC energy.
Heck of a battle. They ended up losing. They do like the, the Elam ending. It was Sideline Cancer who they played, which is one of the best teams like historically. So they had that game that went down to the wire. They had chances late, like they had gotten a bucket on a couple of those possessions. They would have won, but came up a little bit short, but really cool. And I think that's one that it sounds like since they got in, there was decent fan engagement, they might be able to do that consistently, which I think would be cool. And there are probably some guys, especially now that the program seems back to maybe a higher level of play, that in future seasons would be willing to join and play in that. So an interesting basketball one that's probably worth noting.
Great point. And that was another conversation, an interview you did that lives on our YouTube page.
It does.
You did it with, I can't pronounce his
last name. We had Joe Kirkendall and then Dmitry Chabarkova.
Yeah, two last names that are very hard to pronounce.
Yes. Chabarkova played and then Joe kind of handled some of those GM duties. He also has a job within the UVA athletic department. So we did it on the side.
And then moving from basketball, I think we need to talk about all the conference championships won. Women's tennis won their second straight or third straight?
I want to say they've three-peated now, but that I also, sorry, there's so much winning at JMU that it could have been the swimming and dive might have three-peated.
I think they four-peated.
Okay. Well, there you go. We got a lot of a lot of consecutive wins. Let's see if I can find the exact winners here.
Yeah, I was going to look it up. But since Coach Shelly Jordan, I'm going to stop trying to pronounce last names.
We need to get Dom in here. Send him a quick text.
We need to get Dom to pronounce all these names for us because I'm really bad at them. But Coach Shelly, I'm just going to say that. I know how to say Shelly. Has taken over the program. Thanks. Took over the program in 2018 and has just absolutely turned them into a powerhouse. They destroy the CAA now. They're the best, one of the best, if not the best, women's tennis programs in the CAA, and excited to see what their next steps are going to be with the Sun Belt move.
Looks like they've won two of the last three, if I'm looking at the correct thing, but I don't think they've won consecutive, but it had gone a long time for them. I don't know if they'd ever won one actually until they won the first one.
Yeah. William and Mary had like destroyed the CAA for years. And
yes.
She came in and just absolutely,
I should add
they won in 2020, 2021.
I should add a qualifier. They are consecutive champions because 2020 was the COVID year. So they didn't actually have a conference title.
Okay, perfect. So we figured that out.
And then it is a four-peat for swim and dive. You're right.
Yeah, four-peat for swim and dive just absolutely obliterates the competition every year. Just insane stuff. And I did a profile on the dive team back when I worked for JMU Athletics. Don't know where you could even find that. And that was like 28. That was long ago.
Great plug.
But mainly I'm just saying it to – I talked with a lot of the coaching staff during that and – they're built, and I know built different gets thrown around a lot and it's like kind of a joke now, but they're just so good.
Yeah.
As you can see, I really know what I'm talking about when it's swim and dive and they put the best person on to write that article. Really didn't know, but yeah, they've won 2018, 19, 20, 21. And before the four-peat, they hadn't won since 2012. And before 2012, they hadn't won since 2001. So they've come in and the coaching staff has absolutely turned the program around, has turned them into CAA. And like I said, for tennis, excited to see their next steps in the Sun Belt.
100%.
If it's the Sun Belt.
100%. We have a couple other ones, right? Lacrosse grabbed one. And then, of course, the women's golf team fielded a little bit of a juggernaut with some of those youngsters. They picked up their first conference title since 2012-13. So that was really impressive by them. And yeah, lacrosse, I feel like is kind of on the upswing again. Where they won the national title and then I don't want to say really dipped down because that's not entirely true, but they definitely seem like they're poised to get back into that, like, you know, Final Four kind of conversation here in the next couple of years.
100%. Volleyball did some good stuff in 2021. I don't think they won a conference title, though, but did good stuff.
Baseball has chased a lot on the team, which I think is worth noting.
That's going to be a 2022 high point if they can actually do. Number one prospect in the nation in college, the number one collegiate prospect, and they're not going to make the CAA tournament.
I think they're going to win the whole thing.
You are. You think that?
I think they're going to Omaha.
Really?
And we'll be there. We'll be live on.
If they go to Omaha, I will go and eat a sock on live stream if they make it to Omaha.
Okay, clip that.
Okay, I will gladly.
You actually should. I want to see that. I want to see player reaction. Do you
clip it just at the whole team. If they make it to Omaha, I will. I don't know. I'd swim in Newman Lake and then get on a flight to Omaha and then eat a sock.
I love that for you. Do we talk men's soccer too? I think they probably had what NCAA tournament appearance in the spring. I think when they ended up doing that in the spring. I don't believe they won the title though. Yeah. Okay.
This whole COVID thing, like that just sounds weird to say. 2021 is just so meshed in my mind with 2020.
Well, actually they did win the spring conference title.
Thank you. Thank you for checking on that.
It was in PKs. They had a massive PK semifinal win and then a dramatic one in the finals.
Name something more iconic, Jamie men's soccer and PKs.
Yeah, it's hard to remember some of these. So I'm sure we're missing some stuff because we also waited until the 21st of January to do our year in review.
Yeah,
but we cranked it out and we got to look ahead a little bit. We got to do a couple storylines we're looking forward to, I think.
Yeah, before we do that, I just want to say, if we did miss anything, let us know on Twitter at JMU Sports News. Let us know. Be nice to us. Don't be too mean, but let us know if we got anything wrong.
Field hockey came extraordinarily close to winning some conference titles. They're another program that's back on the up and up.
Okay, now what's our look ahead on 2022?
All right, I feel like we got to do something. We don't want to completely remove negativity from the podcast. So let's do something we're most maybe worried or concerned about, which I think is a kind of a fun one, actually. And then we'll do most excited. And then let's do one. I imagine the majority of our listeners, like JMU fans, are pretty good, but the majority of the listeners care mostly about like football, basketball, all that stuff. So let's do one that's like an Olympic sport and just a storyline within those that we're interested in following.
So first off, negativity.
Let's start with the negativity. Let's start negative. Yeah.
I think I'm going to steal yours on accident, or we might have the same one.
Okay, go.
Actually, no. What's yours? Because I have two in my head.
So, like, I guess you don't do. For me, the most worried or concerned, the obvious one that hits me a little bit is like baseball. But the real thing for me is that the Sun Belt basketball is not going to move the needle for me. That's the one that really worries me. Because I think the basketball programs are moving in the right direction. I want those almost as much as football. I'd love those to be like consistently great atmospheres with meaningful, like regular season games if they could get them, even in the conference, right? I want some of those conference rivalries and stuff. And I definitely have some concern that the Sun Belt's not really going to be it, aside from like Marshall and ODU. Like, is there something else that App State, I guess, maybe a little bit. That feels more football-y. But maybe it develops in basketball too. And hopefully there's enough there. But I will say I'm actually kind of worried because it's one that like you saw them, men's basketball beat UVA. We saw that atmosphere. And like, I just want more of those like incredible atmospheres.
I feel like if the team is good, regardless, it's going to have good atmosphere. Like look at Murray State. The Ohio Valley isn't a good conference by any means. It's led by Murray State. And yet they're still fantastic atmospheres there. You know what I mean?
I'll be honest with you. I couldn't tell you what a Murray State atmosphere is. I'm going to take your word for it.
Just the very few games. Maybe it's because the games I see are the ones that are like on ESPNU or like
big ones, yeah.
Plus. So maybe that plays into it. I just feel like Murray State is always a good team. And even though their conference is bad, I mean, look at Gonzaga. Gonzaga brought up the WCC. Like, how do you think the WCC rebrands every 5 years? It's because of Gonzaga's money they're bringing in with all their conference wins. So what I'm saying is, I think first we got to worry about JMU being good, and then we just can win worry games. About the conference. Like, at this point, they weren't going to join a two bid league. So it doesn't matter if they're going from one bid to a one bid. But technically, the Sun Belt is a worse conference in basketball than the CAA is right now.
You've helped my worries a little bit, especially because I watched like when they played UNCW. I can't lie to you and say there was like emotional attachment to the matchup against UNCW.
I think I'd have more attachment watching them play Georgia Southern.
This is fair. All right. I'm less worried now, although I will say I have some concern.
I'm glad you brought – so mine was going to be Diamond Dukes in general. They have the number one prospect in the nation, and they're probably not going to do well. Like, I don't mean to be rude and mean to that team, but, like, just historically speaking, they haven't gotten any better, and they've had three MLB pitchers on their staff at once. Now they have the number one prospect, but how much difference is he going to make? I worry about softball because they lost all of their key contributors. It's a younger team, so I'm going to be really interested to see how they step up. However, I'm going to say football and the Sun Belt move. I really, and not so much about the product on the field, I worry about the fans' reaction to losing six games next season.
This is my favorite take for so many reasons. One, I think it's a valid concern. And two, people, every time you say that they're going to lose more than three games, get so upset. So I like that too. And the other one that's interesting, and I guess we can, maybe we'll talk about it now, maybe we'll talk about it later, where I think we'll learn more in the next week. So maybe we just talk about it next week. But kind of unclear now, a little murkier if they're going to play Sun Belt teams next year.
And also murky with what CUSA is doing.
Yeah, well, I think that would be almost contingent on that all working out. So I think you would need both sides to like be all good and to be able to move into the Sun Belt and play those games essentially next year. But Conference USA was like, we expect you to honor your obligation.
So essentially, if the Conference USA hold deal falls through, JMU's just like a lame duck next year in football, right?
Yeah, I don't think they're losing six games because they might just play like UConn four times or something.
They'll play UConn, UMass, and a home and home, both at home and home in the same year.
And they'll play, they'll probably play Sam Houston, Jacksonville. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with it, but it seems I'm getting a little bit terrified.
Yeah, same. So not only are they going to lose a lot of games, well, not if the whole thing falls through and they're playing FCS schools again. I don't know.
You don't believe in the offense?
No, I have full faith in the offense. I don't have faith in an FBS offense.
This will be interesting to see. Fascinated to watch this development. I'll say that you got Cignetti moving to the FBS as a head coach, which I think is interesting. You got the offense without Antoine Wells. Still think it'll be good, but that's also like a sneaky storyline of 2021. Antoine Wells being as great as he was, and then also transferring. He did all of that in 2021.
Oh man, maybe yeah, he did. And or maybe here's the thing: if you look at Antoine Wells' production too, weeks 1 through 4 or 1 through 3, whenever they played Weber, the offense was electric. And I know they were beating up on bad teams, but it was an electric offense. And then he got injured in that Weber State game, and the offense didn't crater, but it definitely declined. And then when he got healthy again in the playoffs, what happened? The offense took off and was absurdly productive again. It's going to be that. That was something that wasn't talked about a lot throughout the season. And now that he's not there, can the offensive line make running holes? Because they couldn't this year. That's going to be key.
Cignetti has never had a really disappointing semifinal loss without Wells in the roster. So is he going to be able to get JMU to college football playoff and lead them to a really disappointing loss without him or no?
All right,
that's my question. Right. There's my worry.
What was your, what was the second question after worries?
We did. Story okay. So it was worry and then like an Olympic sport, or I guess you could say, let's just say non-football storyline that kind of interests you.
Non-football or basketball storyline.
Okay, sure.
Ooh, this is a good one. You know, I touched on it about softball. I think that's the storyline I'm most interested in coming into this year. They lost Odyssey. They lost Jubis. They lost Gordon. They lost, I don't think,
like Niokas.
Niokas. I'm scrolling through their roster now to see who's
Michelle there. Sullivan. I think Michelle Sullivan actually is at Duke. So they'll see her. I believe they're scheduled this year. They'll see her at some point. I don't think they have UNC, so they won't see Jubis. UNC, I think, has a chance to. The ACC overall has a chance to surprise some people. They got some good softball over there. JMU playing ACC softball would be so much fun. Not to get ahead of myself because I think the Sun Belt would be good, but like, gosh, that'd be cool.
I think Logan Newton's gone too.
Yep. I think she might have. I don't know that she transferred. I think she just like.
I think she graduated because yeah. She's a redshirt junior.
Yeah. That's so, like mean, the first like six of the lineup.
Yeah, they lost a lot. So it's going to be interesting. And I'm not doubting what they can, you know, add back, but there might be some growing pains with this team. Alyssa Humphrey showed that she's a darn mm-hmm. good pitcher. She pitched a few important innings, I think, against Missouri. So they have experience, but they just don't have the same type of experience that they had for the last two seasons. So it's kind of like a reset, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they play with that reset.
They're so young.
That's a,
like,
yeah, I think
like when you roll through the roster, it's a bunch of JMU logos instead of faces because they're all freshmen. They haven't taken headshots. So it'll be interesting to see because, yeah, you're right. They got a couple people that have, like, gone through it a little bit. But outside of a few people, they've got, you know, almost an entirely new team. And the dynamic, I think, is interesting with Lauren Laporte is, like, how do you – get them to appreciate what the program has accomplished and like take that if they're involved in the team, like those learning experiences with also having that like hunger and realizing like, oh, this team hasn't accomplished anything technically. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a good one.
What's yours?
That's a really good one. I think mine to go on like the Olympic sport level, I'm interested to see baseball. Cause like you got DeLauder, like you better have a very good year or they're going to make a coaching change. I don't think that's even like a surprise, right? That's like they've extended Eikenberry with like these little 1 year extensions.
Yeah.
And now you got Chase DeLauder, who's like considered the best player in college baseball. Can you get into your conference tournament? Like that seems like a bare minimum. They got to show something there. I think they're making a change.
I think even if they make it and they bow out in the first round.
I think they might need to make like the NCAA tournament, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. So we'll see what happens there. That's one I'm looking at. The other one is just some of these like Olympic sports that have had success historically. I wonder if they can get back into the conference winning circle. So a field hockey, can they get back in the NCAA tournament? A volleyball, can they get back? And then I also want to see the soccer program, see what they do. So I guess I think field hockey is the big one that I'm keeping an eye on just because I think they won a national title in the past with the same head coach they currently have. They've been trending in the right direction. I'd love to see them be a team that can get back into like the top 15 nationally consistently. And they're also one, they won't be in the Sun Belt, right? That's a storyline too, that maybe is better than the one I just said, but the sports lacrosse. And I want to say it's like swim and dive and field hockey don't have conferences when they go to the Sun Belt. So where are they going to go?
A-10.
Yeah, we'll see where they go. So that's one to monitor. And I think along with that, I'm interested to see field hockey, wherever they go, can they get back to being like a national brand? Because I feel like they're close.
I like it. I just want to say Jace Tolada last season, guess what he batted?
339.
386. Six home runs, 21 RBIs, two triples, 12 doubles, 25 walks, 11 stolen bases, and he also pitched seven in the third inning.
I think at that point, though, like we need more out of him. Like he's not doing enough for JMU to make it to Omaha.
He's going to have to pitch a complete game and bat 1 through 9 or 1 through 8.
Yeah, they're going to have to clone him, and he's going to have to pitch every day. He's going to have to blow out his arm. He might have to start pitching righty and lefty. Man, he's a really good player, though.
He is. Anything else you got to add? Oh, wait. I guess we got to talk quickly about basketball then.
Yeah. Do we do most excited yet?
What am I most excited for?
Yeah.
All the negativity we just talked about the Sun Belt move. I also am the most excited about the Sun Belt move.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. For me, it's like, whenever football is going to play, and I hope it's this year, I guess we'll see what actually happens. Maybe it'll end up being a 2023 look ahead. Whenever football plays Appalachian State and Old Dominion, those are like circle the calendar, stop what you're doing, quit your job for the week, prep, tailgate, take the week off.
Jesus.
And just get into it. No, but I'm excited for those by far. I think those are matchups that matter. And like, especially the team at the Appalachian State, like Coastal Carolina games could matter on like a G5 national level, which is cool because JMU's never really had that, right? JMU's played like the FCS semifinals, and people who like really know football think it's cool. Nobody else cares. Nobody else thinks knows it's happening. Like maybe they see it on like their betting app and they're like, are these real teams?
But degenerate gamblers hardly know what FCS football is.
Yeah, so it's those like don't actually move the needle. Appalachian State playing JMU with one of the teams in the top 25 on like a Thursday night or something on ESPN actually moves the needle a small amount. So looking for those, forward to those games. That's definitely my most excited thing. And maybe some of the road trips related to those. And you're in a pretty good spot for some of those potential road trips.
I'm in a fantastic spot here in Charlotte. Boone's right there. I think mm-hmm. Georgia State and Southern are within like some hour radius, which is very drivable. Yeah, I'm excited for the away games where I can go and just hop on over and watch them.
100%. I think it could be a good year. And next week, I think it'll be a podcast dedicated to reacting to Sunbelt news, probably.
Yeah, hopefully there's actually news that comes out this week and the Conference USA does good things.
Yeah, I think I still think they have those meetings on the 25th or 26th next week, which is
so in a few days,
Tuesday, Wednesday. So we'll see what happens.
You know what else we need to see what happens?
Mark Byington winning a national title.
Yes. And how can they rebound from losing back-to-back games? First time they've lost back-to-back this season, second home loss of the season, second home conference loss of the season. And this one was in heartbreaking fashion. JMU trailed by one at halftime. They build up a 12-point lead with like 7 minutes or so left. They have a 6-point lead with a minute and a half left. And then they lose by one to UNCW. And I know UNCW is undefeated in conference play, and people, Seahawk fans, are calling it a dream team and a dream season, and they have a new coach who's kind of turned them around a little bit, trying to bring them back to the Kevin Keats era. I don't care about any of that. UNCW is a bad team, and JMU just lost to them. And they lost to Elon, a bad team.
I will say that I like that we're like, oh, they lost two conference games in a row. Where in the past, it was like you had to wait for like months to, if they could win two conference games in a row under Rowe. It was like, wow.
Back-to-back conference.
It was like, wow, they did it. They won back-to-back conference games. Yeah, his last season, they only beat UNCW. So they didn't win back-to-back conference games. They were what, like 2-16 in the league or something embarrassing? But losing UNCW stinks. This is not the Kevin Keats UNCW. I know they're playing pretty well right now, but they should have won the game. They had the lead. Did things well for stretches. It's also frustrating too because they were playing really well before the COVID pause, and they
were
just
up
not.
To before the COVID pause. They were up to 167, 160 in KenPom. They're currently 203.
Yeah, I mean they faded pretty hard after that Elon loss, and then to lose at home against UNCW was tough, especially the buzzer. That's not fun to watch. But coming into it, they had been the fourth luckiest team according to KenPom, which essentially means you're winning a lot of close games that like. Statistically, like you should lose some of those when they're that close, and they have a bunch of games where they weren't that close, or at least a blowout loss. They don't have many blowout wins over D1 teams. So I guess eventually they were due for a buzzer beater loss or something like that to kind of nip them in the butt. But hopefully they get better moving forward. I'm still excited about the team, but I feel good about my take last time where I said they're not that good.
I do want to say, just to bring you back to earth on that take, you then texted immediately the next day. Just kidding. They're really good.
That's probably when they, it was the same day we did it. Didn't we do it before they blew out Northeastern? Like the day
that was it. Yep. And then you're like, just kidding. They're good.
They blew them out. And the last three games have been underwhelming. The William Mary game where they almost lost that because they started so slow. Then Elon smoked them. So they've got a long way to go, I think. And I think that was kind of the point I was making is like, Byington has brought them back to competence, but we're so used to the last few years of how bad they were that we're thrilled, but they're still not actually like an elite basketball team or like a top tier mid-major. They've got a long
way
to go.
Not even a top team in the CAA. Like looking
no,
at
they're not.
The CAA
yeah.
has done this season. You have Towson, who's a top 100 KenPom team. They're 92. Towson's 5-1 in conference. UNCW is 4-0. Like I said, they're 10-5 overall. They're not a good team by any means. It's kind of, I don't want to say luck because good job, you got to 4-0 in conference, but they play Towson next, and let's see how they play Towson. But then Delaware is also a solid team, plus in adjusted efficiency, plus from Hofstra, plus by Drexel. The top of the CAA is pretty solid. And I mean, if Towson makes it in, or even if Hofstra makes it into the tournament, they might have a win in them.
I agree with you. And the other thing that is like kind of sad is that Towson has Cam Holden, who is playing exceptionally well. He's averaging 14 points and almost 9 rebounds a game. He's shooting 35% from three and 48% from the floor. He gets some steals. He gets some assists.
Where are you going with this?
He wanted, like, he literally told Shane Metlin that, like, JMU was his number one, as like a transfer.
And then his credits wouldn't transfer, right?
I think it was something related to credits or whatever. So he ends up going to Towson, and he's like, he's a legitimate CAA player of the year candidate. Like, if they had added him to some of the guys on this roster, it would have been absolutely nuts. So that's disappointing, but maybe a good sign moving forward that I think some people are pretty excited to consider JMU. So I'm interested to see how the team develops over time and what happens moving forward. But I'm also, it's taken the life out of me that this team and the women's team can't play in the conference tournament, because that would have drastically affected my excitement, right?
And right now, instead of talking about like what we're talking about, you're talking about adjustments you can make and how you fix it moving forward and what's to come in the conference tournament. Can they make a run in the conference tournament? And instead, you were frozen there for a second.
Yeah, I lost you.
I'm probably just saying if the conference tournament was still on the table, our reactions right now would be vastly different. It's how do you improve? You still have time to get back to your pre-COVID pause form. But now it's just kind of sitting there and you're like, well, to even have a look from the NIT, you had to continue to win. You had to win out after the Hofstra game, you know?
You had to be in a really good clip, yeah. So that'll be tough. I hope they win 20 games. They have 13 left and they would need 9 wins to get that. Women's team, I really don't have major expectations there. I'm just hoping that next year, whatever they're in, I hope they're eligible to compete and stuff, because it seemed like they're going to be in the Sun Belt. Some of this seems kind of confusing with how teams are moving over. Maybe that's just football, but I've yet to see clarity. So hopefully we get some soon.
Yes. All right. Anything else you want to add?
Nope. I think we'll probably preview baseball and softball at some point in the coming
few weeks. I think they start beginning of February, mid
Women's basketball team won today, 57-56.
Yep. They had a large lead. So that's not good.
They almost blew it, but Kiki Jefferson had a phenomenal game. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 turnover.
Kind of funny that UNCW scored 5 points in one quarter, and they still only lost by 1.
But on the bright side, they clipped UNCW, and they got revenge for the men's basketball team's loss.
Yes. All right. For Bennett Conlin, my name is Jack Fitzpatrick. Talk to you guys next week here on the JMU Sports News Podcast, presented by Bet Online. Have a wonderful rest of your day. See ya.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.